Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. This is my first APHA, and I've had a chance to go around. And certainly the two presenters today, you're going to see a little bit of an overlap on some slides presented in a different manner in which I've looked at it. This is essentially a quantitative analysis study that I started pursuing, I guess, about the time that I had to put in an abstract for this presentation, and I've since developed it into a dissertation. So I've gone a little bit beyond by broadening the scope into looking at increased maternal insults instead of just maternal smoking. One of the things that you'll note with what I'm doing, I'm actually using longitudinal data, repeated measures, growth models. And that's something that's been lacking in the literature. There's been roughly about a dozen publications that have made the association between maternal smoking and the risk of childhood obesity. But, and despite other limitations that I won't go into, one of the major ones was that they were all using cross-sectional data. I will talk about another one right away, is that a lot of the populations that they used were non-U.S. populations. So I think this is the starting of the genesis of a body of research that I've pursued that actually looks at a generalizable set of analytical results for the U.S. Child population. Right off, I want to acknowledge my collaborators and PhD mentors, Dr. Bisaka Sen and Richard Shuchuk at the University of Alabama at Birmingham, and also the NRSA T32 Fellowship, which has afforded me the opportunity to conduct studies like this. What I'm going to present in the next few minutes is basically an overview. I'll give you some definitions of what I'm using, talk about the importance of studying childhood obesity, look at the prevalence again. We're using a different graph but similar results to what's already been presented, and pose it a biological basis as to why there is an association between maternal smoking and childhood obesity. I'll then talk about the data source that I'm using, the statistical methodology, and also the variables that I've included to generate the results, the parsimonious results from the models. And I'll also translate my discovery into potential policy. So just a quick overview. I'm using the standard body mass index as my dependent variable, weight in kilograms divided by height in meters squared. I'm using growth modeling, but I also want to present this these results in terms of the what's, I guess, common cut points in determining overweight or obesity, something that I can compare my results with other bodies of research. So I'm using overweight as the gender-specific, age by BMI, 90th percentile and above, and obesity as the gender-specific, 95th percentile and above of age by BMI. I've only listed four bullets here. I could take up this whole session listing bullets on the importance of studying childhood obesity. One prophetic quote that was taken from a Hill and Trowbridge paper you'll see on the next page, and that childhood obesity is a very serious problem, and it is getting worse rapidly. This was in 1998. In 2004, federal legislation required that all schools who have federal funding have some kind of wellness program in place. So you see the target of combating childhood obesity has traditionally been at increasing physical activity for children. I'm going to say suggest that you might want to start earlier in combating childhood obesity. In 2005, just once again highlighting the importance, the IOM classified childhood obesity as an issue as an epidemic. And President Bush's nominee for the new Surgeon General has declared that fighting childhood obesity is going to be his top priority. Once again, the numbers are fairly similar to what's been presented. As I mentioned, Hill and Trowbridge were a bit prophetic in 1998 in that you can see that there has been an increase. The cohort that I'm looking at are children between 5 and 12 years of age, and certainly amongst that cohort, there has been an exponential increase through the most recent data of 2004. The biological basis, I guess, was first suggested by Barker and when he posited his fetal origins of adult disease hypotheses. And that, along with his collaborator Hale in developing the thrifty phenotype hypothesis, is basically a story about nutrition on and how nutrition gets transferred to a fetus, whether it be suppressed appetite by a female smoker during pregnancy or just the nicotine that's setting up a barrier, a placental barrier, to prohibit nutrients from going through the placenta to the child. This story basically tells in a more clinical way that children of mothers who smoke have less and more improper nutrition, and hence they come out and they're born low birth weight, and then there's a catch-up period, and these kids don't have the development in the metabolic and endocrine systems. They're compromised by the mother smoking, that children don't know when to turn off the nutritional intake after they catch up. More recently, authors have been starting to term this type of phenomena with regards to programming. So we look at developmental programming or prenatal programming, looking at negative maternal insults on the fetus in utero and how that's going to program a child for an increased risk of negative health effects and outcomes postpartum. So the data that I'm using to conduct this study is from the National Longitudinal Survey of Youth. This is a study conducted by the Bureau of Labor Statistics initially, and it the intriguing possibility that it offers me is that it has data on mothers and children, dyadic data. So within my cohort that I've assigned, 5 and 12 years of age, I have 6,194 children who were surveyed repeatedly starting in 1986 through to 2004. Now, obviously, these the age limits of the cohort that I'm looking at are overlapping as they go along, so there could be a temporal effect that I may talk about a little bit later, but there really isn't. The statistical analysis, I'm using a mixed model approach, SAS-PROC mixed, and intuitively the random intercept slope growth model seems to be the one appropriate for what I want to use, and indeed after numerous comparisons of models using a quadratic slope and different covariance structures, indeed the random intercept slope model fits my data the best. The variables that I'm using, I'm actually, because of the multivariate normal assumption of PROC mixed, I'm taking the log of childhood BMI, which seems to work. I'll exponentiate it out after when I talk about some of the results to get it back on the regular BMI scale. And my main predictor is maternal smoking, and I've used three categories for this. Non-smokers did not smoke 12 months prior to pregnancy. I don't know if they were ever smokers or not. I know they didn't smoke 12 months prior to pregnancy. Those who quit did smoke 12 months prior to pregnancy, but quit during pregnancy. And smokers continue to smoke during pregnancy. Now, if you recall, my cohort starts in 1986, and I'm picking up five-year-olds. So they could have been born in 1981. I say that because there's 25% smokers during pregnancy in my population. There's 3.5% quitters, and the rest are non-smokers. I've adjusted the model for all the common literature-suggested covariates that I could, given the limitation that I'm using a secondary data source. So here's just a quick overview of the... I want to get some figures that actually kind of tell the story a little better. But here's the quick dirty tables on the model parameters, and you can see that... I've included an age by maternal smoking status interaction. So this is indeed, there is a significant difference between smokers and non-smokers. Smokers seem to have a higher age by, a higher BMI parameter in this level. And even though these aren't significant main effects, we're not going to worry about that quite yet, given that this is significant. I don't want to get too detailed and bogged down in too much geek speak. There's another story that is being told, and I'm writing this up for a submission for publication, and that drinking is also a fairly significant contributor to a negative effect growth in BMI. And we see it that, once again, using the interaction and the main effect terms, is that what it comes out to be is that drinkers, children of mothers who drank, have less BMI than those who didn't drink. And we can talk about, you know, fetal alcohol syndrome and the like. That seems to be a consistent result with the literature. The other covariances, they're not overly exciting. They're fairly consistent. Of the continuous variables, mother's BMI at when the child is age 5, mother's age at child's birth, and weight during pregnancy all have a positive association with childhood BMI. Children who weren't breastfed have a higher childhood BMI. Those in poverty compared to those not in poverty have a lower childhood BMI. And of course, as we've seen, race is also significant. Non-whites tend to demonstrate in this study they have a higher childhood BMI. So that's the covariates, my adjusting variables, if you like. This is really the sexy graph that I want you to take home and focus in on and look at non-smokers and quitters, the childhood BMI, the adjusted childhood BMI, least squared mean estimates are fairly similar. So if you quit during your pregnancy or prior to your pregnancy, your child has the same risk of becoming having higher childhood BMI than as those who don't smoke. But and as we see, those who children whose mothers smoked have at all ages a significantly higher difference in childhood BMI. And this is probably in large part due to the small numbers of those who quit. We're only picking it up at 8 through 12 for the quitters. So if there's a message to take away, quitting is good, even if it's just during the pregnancy. I also modeled some predicted percentages of overweight just to test and see if my model was in the ballpark for what I was looking at. And while these aren't statistically significant across smoking categories, you note that there is a trend in that smokers tend to have children who are higher BMI and have a higher percentage of obesity. These are between 4 and 8% different than the actual BMI values from the data. And that's attributable to the fact that there's still a lot of variation that I need to explain with other variables to put into the model. So we have the discovery that maternal smoking is indeed significantly associated with increased risk of childhood obesity. Well, what are we going to do? We're going to translate it into some kind of policy, hopefully. And basically, we need to target mothers, not children at school age in physical activity programs, but mothers. And on top of the myriad of other reasons to quit smoking, this is yet another one to implement during the counseling sessions in prenatal child visits. We also, just the negative effects of childhood obesity, we also need to tell mothers how this is going to impact their children, you know, from a social emotional perspective of carrying weight. We know kids are cruel in school, and kids who are overweight tend to be taunted, and so this is the type of message I think we need to get across. I'm not trying to present a carrot and stick kind of policy suggestion here, but these are just realities that we need to. Certainly the economic cost translates into my third policy implication in that these kids are going to be competing for healthcare resources because of their obesity that elderly Americans that are increasing, the population is increasingly becoming elderly, are going to be competing with also. So it's just going to place an increased strain on the healthcare system in general. Finally, I just want to talk about the main limitation of my study in that I do not have, that's kind of not true, lifestyle behavior or dietary variables to actually include and adjust my model with. They are available in the 2002 and 2004 childhood supplemental surveys from NLSY, but that would have shrank my data set too small to get my quit category in there. And if it wasn't so serious, this might be, you know, a kind of a funny caption. I don't know if you can read this, but this is an actual picture from the Roanoke Times, and this lady is worried while she's smoking a cigarette about how the jackhammering from the construction across the street is affecting her unborn fetus. So, you know, it's kind of a bit of an irony, but I just wanted to include it because I don't have the jackhammer variable either, but I do have some other variables that might convince her to stop smoking during pregnancy. So at the end of the session or right now, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for your attention.